Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to the Explicit Measures podcast with Tommy, Seth, and Mike. Morning, everybody.
Good morning.
All right, there we go. Someone's going to say something.
I mean, you were hesitating there, Tommy. I left the space open for you.
I forgot it's Thursday, so we don't get the nice little jingle. We don't have a jingle for Thursday.
At least some of us remember that.
We don't have a jingle. We have a whole intro.
It's been a busy week, man. How have your weeks been? Mine's been off the hook. Well, I mean, and that's majorly probably because I was on vacation the previous, right? Always like that, but wow.
I feel like the work while you're gone happens and it kind of like compresses. And then all of a sudden Monday comes and you're like, boom. Yeah. And then like, you're like behind and catching up. Yeah. Every time I go on any conference trip, I come back and I'm like, the first 3 days are like intense because I'm like catching up and things happen when I got to figure out what's going on. I think that's more important. I think it also happens more when you have a team like around you, mm-hmm. because sometimes the team's doing things and then they're like, okay, I'll just wait till Seth comes back. And then they're like, questions.
I was waiting to ask you. No, you should have just gone and done the thing.
Well, it's not necessarily that. It's more like I did this thing. I just wanted to double check like the direction, you know, or something I was going on.
Man, it's like by Tuesday, I think I've already done the same amount of work that I would typically do in an entire week. But anyway.
So it means you're done, right? It means Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, is complete.
Well, Wednesday yesterday was one of those, like, I was really excited after the days, you know, where a whole bunch of things fell into place. I was crushing through my to-do list.
Nice.
Going into today, I'm like, it's a quarter of the size. Like, it's going to be a good day.
Nice. Awesome.
Yes, Tommy.
Man, anytime I have a full day training, that's when my week is kind of put to waste. So doing a lot of dashboard in a daze still, mm-hmm. even though Fabric's a thing. I'm wondering if they're going to have a Fabric in a day.
They have it. It's out.
We'll see how much that you can get through in one day.
Let's increase the size of the things you're going to build and the number of things you're going to build. And let's still shove it into a single day. Like there's no way you can be able to, we're going to build a full lake house and everything else and get you to build reports on top of it. Additionally,
there's brain drain from Power Query in the first, right before lunch in Power BI. So, hey, now pipeline. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about medallion and mesh data mesh. Let's add these things. Cause your brain wasn't mush enough already.
Model is. So yeah.
I think you're right. On that one, it probably would make more sense to start aligning like, okay, it's going to be BI developers in a day. It's going to be data engineer in a day. It's going to be data science in a day. Like the personas, I think, make more sense to be like maybe a single day activity around what their kind of workflow may look like. That may be something more, a bit more of like a space. So we're going through, there's really no major agenda here. There's a couple announcements that have been coming across the Microsoft blog. So today will probably be another, let's call it a all up news day as well, because we're just kind of catching all the news and announcements that came out from Fabric, looking at any blog posts that came out either from the Power BI blog or the Fabric blog. There's a couple announcements that have been made over the last couple days since the Fabric conference has been produced. So we'll do that one. And we'll jump into, let's see what else we have here. Yeah, I think that's probably about it.
I mean, there was so much that we didn't get to on Tuesday that we wanted to do it justice and keep on plugging away.
Excellent.
So anyway.
With that, you picked up something interesting, Seth. So there's inside there's a blog from Arun, which I'll put in the link here as well. Mm-hmm. So I'll put this link down here in the bottom. So this is the link for the blog post from Arun, kind of really talking through many of the main features of what happened at the Fabric conference. But there's a couple sections here in the very beginning. Start talking about join the Microsoft Fabric thriving community. You had some observations around there, Seth, that you kind of wanted to point out.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the first one that is a byproduct of, I think, a lot of the success that we saw with the launch of Power BI and just how there's fantastic stories of the change that in careers that people can make and how big of a deal it is by, you know, individuals adopting a lot of the new innovation that Microsoft is putting out.
Yeah.
And I think what anecdotally, whether it's not like right or wrong, I'm seeing, like, they have an entire page with one of my favorite people in the world right at the top, Shannon Lindsay, with her description of exactly that, her journey from, you know, I think medicine, right? Like nothing to do with data, to someone who's leading a lot of the initiatives around the learning centers. So there's an entire page, you know, part of this Fabric community, all focused on career development. So it's like, rather than Microsoft offering up these certification exams, like there's cloud skills challenges, there's Learn Together, Exam Cram, Practice Test, like all of the things that I think are very welcoming for people to come in and learn a lot within the Fabric ecosystem. And I think it's a great play. Rather than just having technical documentation that describe the different parts of things like that, there's much more of a lean in with Fabric to bring as many people along for the ride. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, how, you know, the dynamics of this change, because they're even describing, you know, the roles of individuals. So at least like when we talk about those roles, right, like even stated in her little video is like the Power BI engineer, what this focus is on, what they're calling an analytics engineer. I think they missed the opportunity of just taking the Fabricator. But ultimately, you know, a ton of investment, I think, in helping the community learn as a whole, or bring people from, you know, one state where they know Power BI and start to stretch their skills into all of the other things that are Fabric that we've talked about a lot.
I think this is a really good observation, Seth. And I think this kind of aligns very well with my mental model of like, who's coming to Fabric. It's not a lot of data engineers or data scientists that have other tools other places. They may look at it or dabble in it initially, but I think what you have is you have a huge user base of citizen BI developers, or people who have been able to just get started with Power BI. And to Microsoft's credit here, there's no way, you don't drive more adoption unless people understand how to use your tools, period. Like, if you want people to be comfortable in it, and you want people to build things that are, if you think you're building something that's going to help people do their job better, faster, more efficiently, teach them how it works. Teach them why this makes things more efficient. So without a centered effort around understanding and creating and being comfortable with it and knowing all the things that you need to know, you have to have an army of people that are going to be able to go through training and understand how the technology works, so you can inform, so you can use inside your organization. There's going to be decisions that have to be made that I think this stuff helps do that. And I think a lot of this is, yeah. I like a lot of this part here where it's like, you know, hack together, right? Join a community of people and figure out a problem and work with other people to figure out a solution to a thing. If anything I've learned from the Fabric pieces, there's going to be so many different ways. Let me say it this way. It's not so many different ways. Let me say it this way. We have pipelines. We have data flows. We have Spark. We have more different compute layers that we can use. How do you know which one to use? Where's the best opportunity for the compute that you need? Granted, it all talks and can write the data down into the Delta format inside your one lake, which is great. But that's a larger skill set. I wouldn't expect someone to come in and say, I know all three skill sets right away. You may know two and you may not know the third. So how can I use the third? And I think business users are going to show up and be like, oh yeah, Power Query. Yep. 100%. We're right there. We'll use data flows all day long. And then they're going to run into a wall and they'll say, oh, actually I could use pipelines. Pipelines are pretty interesting. Here's a use case for pipelines. And then they start using pipelines. And then you potentially run into a problem where you're using pipelines to go get data and you have random semi-structured data. Like, oh, well, let's try this thing called Python notebooks. So let's start there. And so you kind of becomes this progression of like you get into with a tool with what feels comfortable, but then you grow into these other areas.
Yeah.
And I hope they expand more on the page too when it comes to the different roles, right? At the very bottom, to your point, the analytics engineer and then the lowly data analyst, what we all used to be. Hopefully they expand on that more. I was never
a data analyst.
Yeah.
Don't talk for me.
I'm just saying what's on the page, man. I'm just reading the words.
Oh.
Yeah, just reading the
you
words.
You said we were all data analysts. Well, I said, no, Tommy. This is a point of contention I'm making. Sorry, continue.
This is, yes. But there's these four roles, and I think for a lot of people, they probably can't do all four. And if they want to learn more about, okay, where do I fit in this? What do I want to do? Like, kind of like, what is that expectation for an analytics engineer? Not just the product they're going to be working in, but what is that expectation for them, both from the tooling, the process, their own career growth, right? Not just working with the product, but kind of moving in the future. CompTIA does certifications for IT, and they do a great job for all the certifications they do, talking about the whole career path, if you get into security or networking. And I think Fabric is really expanding now, where, again, analytics engineer, data analyst, data engineer, data scientist, these are all full-time jobs already that exist out there in our industries that are now in Fabric. So I really do love that they're putting everything together, but I really think this could be a really great hub for just people learning, or if they want to transition either from one data space to another, or someone's coming from the outside.
I kind of disagree with some of their words on here. So they put the data analyst and the analytics engineer. If I look at those two different roles, they read almost the same to me. There's almost no distinction. You know, an analytics engineer builds reusable analytical assets like data sets, reports, pipelines, and notebooks. And then it takes, you know, it consumes the curated layer. They ingest data using shortcuts, pipelines, or data flows. Again, they're doing some data engineering already, light data engineering already. So that's interesting to me. The analytics engineer is doing that. There's less emphasis on talking to the business, speaking, you know, building reports, building actionable reports. I mean, I think that would be the analytics person I would put more towards that.
The data analyst.
Well, that was the analytics engineer. But again, I don't think analytics engineer has a role here. I think it's data engineer, and it's like, analyst. And then you look at the analyst role, it's like, maximize the value of data through visualization and reporting. But then it says, exposing data through Power BI reports, semantic models, and SQL endpoints, transform data with data flows and procedures. Yeah. I mean, they read very similar to me.
Well, I had the same thoughts.
I was like, I don't,
you gotta, you have to draw, you have to draw, like, listen, you have to draw the line in the sand somewhere of saying like, okay, we have these roles. What do we call them? In the ecosystem, there are data engineers. Everybody knows what a data engineer does.
I think that's a more traditional role. Sure. Yes.
What I think you're scratching on is the same itch I had, which is, well, like this is a mix of what I would call a BI developer role. You have the technical skills that branch into data engineering that you can do in like the very technical systems, all the way up to working with the business and developing reporting. An analyst typically lives further, closer to the business to refine requirements, work with data that's more curated and prep for them. But I also get where they want to throw in some of the pipeline transformation stuff, because that's what data pipelines and flows and all the things that Power BI introduced to them in a generic fashion that allows them to automate some of the things that they were doing manually before.
So that's actually a really interesting point, because looking at that data analyst role and just the two bullet points, Microsoft has literally created careers, jobs, and teams with Power BI as the business intelligence user, not necessarily, to your point, Seth, just a normal data analyst. You're right. Like, there's so much that just in Power BI. Interesting too, they talk about the salary. I won't go into this, but I think their role for the data analyst here is not the standard Power BI role. that we're used to. It can't be.
Well, here, let me give you the flavor of what I think should be the roles, right? I think there are four roles, but I think I would describe them differently. And here's how I would describe them. The data engineer is focused on artifacts that are not semantic models. It's lakehouse, it's mm-hmm. pipelines, it's more of the movement of data elements across the different artifacts that are in a workspace. Data scientist, sure. We can clearly define
that's the one on here that I agree with.
I think it's the clearest one. The data scientist, I think I also kind of agree with, right? They're using specific technologies around AI, ML. Mm-hmm. They're consuming a lot of the things that come from the platform, but they're working on experiments and models. To me, that role
seems very back in enhanced data.
Yep. Exactly right. Perfect. Those two I feel comfortable with. The data analyst and analytics engineer, I think they're trying to say is the analytics engineer is the data modeler. Is what I think they're trying to say. That is the data modeler expertise, right? You understand DAX, you understand semantic models, you know how to consume all the things from upstream elements, and you work very closely with a data engineer, and you may even have some, you know, overlapping roles with the data engineer. So to me, the analytics engineer feels like the technical expert to build models. And then the data analyst feels like the report builder. Now, I know you can't say like, model builder, report builder, but that to me, that's where I would draw the lines there. And so I think that's where I'm shaking out the different roles. And when I talk to an organization, this makes more sense because when you look at the people in your organization, this is how it very much aligns to how I see the company. And again, this may be a person that wears many of the same hats, right? Typically, you'll find smaller businesses, the data analyst and analytics engineer is the same person. And potentially even the data engineer is also that same person. So I think there's a role there for that, but you just better be ready to pay more because that's now three people's role in one. Anyways, that's my thoughts on those. Would you agree? Do you feel like, you know, that's kind of what they're trying to get to?
I got hung up on the part where you were like, they're completely glossing over the semantic model layer in here, but I suppose you could kind of bury that in the lakehouse data warehouse part, but it's not really a store, right? There's so much shaping that has to happen for Power BI. Now, is it ultimately going to be a table that is in the back? Yes, it is, but that doesn't mean that entire body of work is not there. And that's where a high level of expertise is required to make all those other things work. And I think that's an overstep or a miss because it also creates the same challenges that I have had in all of the organizations I've ever worked in, which is, well, we have data engineers. What do you do? It's like, my God, there is so much more. Like, we're not just developing Power BI is the infrastructure as well as the reports. It's all of the heavy data work that we have to do, the real-time calculation building that you get in all of your reports, and you just see this other 5%, right? And I think that's what's glossed over here.
And when I look at the analytics engineer versus the data engineer, to me, those descriptions read very similar. Like I'm trying to figure out what is the distinction between the analytics engineer, because the analytics engineer is saying, hey, you're building data sets, pipelines, and notebooks. Okay. You look over at the data engineer, you're looking at the same thing.
Yeah.
Integrate, transform, and like you're working on the same tools. So to me, there's a lot of overlap in what those two roles would be doing. So I think you could get a very well educated analytics engineer, and most of your data engineer problems are getting solved by that analytics engineer, in my opinion.
Yeah. I would. Yeah. Whatever. Anyways, I think we killed it.
Maybe semantics on that
so,
one.
On top of it, love the career page, love the video that Shannon Lindsay did. And I think it highlights the opportunities for people. By the way, if you want to cram it in, we were talking business people, you know, ramping up. But for others that already know these services, a quick way to get the certification, if you're interested, and it's free. There's 100% discount on it through April 19th. Go to this page.
Do it.
Mike, to your point, it's things that they know, but it's going to be a different environment. So just clicking through things and getting acclimated with it, it's a great thing. The other thing that I haven't noticed, but I believe they've shifted now, is the community page actually lands on a page that kind of directs you into the different services. So
Community, you're talking about like community.fabric.com.
Yeah.
Community. So switching community.fabric.microsoft.com. So it's the
switching gears here a little bit. So there's a great landing page now. It points out the different services that have come together because there have been longstanding communities around each of these things. Data Activator is a new one, but I'm glad that they pointed this out in the announcements because there is a huge, robust set of communities that are coming together that will be, you know, going along the journey of question, answer, and all that kind of thing. As I'm saying that, you know, it's going to be really interesting is like you look at the Power BI community and you go into that and it's a different flavor, whatever, but you're looking at 7 years of questions and answers and like how much that has now changed with like people going like, wait a minute, what? I'm new to this whole Fabric thing. I just want to learn some Power BI. A response 3 years ago told me I could do this. There's a lot of that in these communities that, and Fabric, I think, just kind of throws that in a tizzy. So as you go in here, pay attention to like when people answered and like what the dates were, because I think there's going to be another big evolution. And this isn't new. Fabric isn't, you know, the only thing that's going to do this to a community. There have been huge feature announcements throughout that radically change how the tool works. But I just chuckled as I was kind of thinking through that.
And I want to point out something here, too. Also on this homepage for the Fabric community, you have Power BI, you have Synapse, Data Factory, and Data Activator. From my knowledge, Synapse and Data Factory kind of pre-existed in their own Azure-based platforms, right? You could go buy Synapse right from Azure. It had its kind of own flavor. And a lot of the Synapse elements for data engineering, data science, data engineer, those roles that they brought to Fabric came right from Synapse. A lot of the tooling that was there kind of pre-existed. They freshened it up. They've made it better. They're making it better. And it's coming into the Fabric ecosystem. Again, Data Factory, similar, right? It's not the exact same Data Factory. There are some feature gaps between the current pipeline experience today in Fabric versus what's actually in Azure Data Factory inside Azure. So again, there's some feature gaps, but it's very quickly closing. And again, I would argue a lot of the workloads you could do previously can still just work inside Fabric pipelines, no issue. So those two I understand. One I don't understand is Data Activator. So Data Activator is like a new name for something there was no equivalent Data Activator inside of Azure at that point. Like now it's using tools, like it's using like event hubs and it's using technology that existed, but they've changed a whole new name and they just basically made up a new product and said, okay, this is what we're going to do. This is going to be real actionable data, event-based data collection and event-based actions through Data Activator. Is that kind of your impression as well? Did you hear of anything else before? Am I missing something here?
No, it's brand new and you can tell because you go to the community page and there's 290 posts or so, you know. Yeah, it's
now,
it's
now we know where we need to contribute. Let's contribute there because it's wide open.
Hey, four people, right? Who want to get engaged in the community?
That's what I'm saying.
This is the perfect time. Like, get engaged in what Data Activator is, all the things about it, answer all the questions. Like, this is how Power BI started, right? When Power BI came out, there were a handful of people that dove in. I was one, Mike, you were one, I think, that dove in and were just the only ones answering questions. And it opens doors. You can start to become part of the super users program and all these things. Like, so very early open products like Data Activator and that community, like perfect opportunity for you to dive in and get engaged with the community.
And you'd be the first one to submit a post in 2024.
I'm submitting one right now.
There you go.
Go listen to this podcast when we talk about Data Activator.
It's great.
It's good though. I mean, I agree. And I think, you know, as us, so for those of you who want to become MVPs or want to get more involved in the community in general, we would highly encourage you. Go find things that Microsoft's building that are new because typically there's not a community around it yet and they're looking for experts in that area. Go learn those things, figure out what works best for you and talk about them. Be vocal about it. go to the Microsoft, build a webinar around these things, like do specific actions around these topics, because again, Microsoft is going to want to push these new products and these new features for people to get involved and engage with. And so becoming an early investor in that content, that kind of really be, let's say it this way, it's less competitive. Well, right. Yeah. If you want to become a Microsoft MVP for Power BI, it's going to be way more competitive now just because there's so many more people already aware. There's people been doing this for years. You're not competing with people who have very well established brands and websites that have a lot of domain knowledge in this. So you have to quickly get up to speed to compete with those, or you can find an area that is newer and needs some assistance there as well. So I think Microsoft would very much reward users who help out in new areas as well. Excellent. Other thoughts around the community piece? I think the only thing I will add here would be is if you go into the Fabric user groups, so there's an area on the community site where you have Fabric user groups. It feels like now all user groups, I mean, Microsoft kind of had a little bit of a self-identity issue around, okay, am I a Power Platform user group? Am I a Power BI user group? What user group am I? And I think they've kind of finally merged everything into like the same thing. Like, it doesn't matter if you're Power BI, Fabric, it really doesn't matter. Like, you're going to talk about things of Fabric, whether it's Power BI, Power, you know, all the things. Power Platform pieces may be slightly different still, but like I feel like they've now lumped everything into the Fabric environment. So I think that's pretty good.
Does that mean I have to change my logo now?
It totally does. And I don't know if it's the same for you guys, but it's geo aware. So the first groups that pop up
are closest to you.
Chicago Power BI user group, Milwaukee Brew City Power Platform, because they made us change, right? Like it was a shift to Power Platform groups. And now
we're Fabric groups
with new icons so that the Brew City is the Fabric.
We should have just stuck with this stinking brew mug the whole time.
We should have just rocked it.
Stayed with it.
Well done, Madison Fabric user group. You're ahead of everybody else.
We should just update our name so now we can be the Milwaukee Brew City Fabric Power Platform Data Activator user group.
No, what we should be is the Milwaukee Brew City Fabricators.
Yes, I like it. Yeah. I'm going to see if I can go modify the name now.
Anyway.
That sounds like a local bar beer.
There you go. I know.
The Fabric.
I think that makes sense. IPA. What was that? Special IPA?
Yeah,
but anyway,
yeah, we should do that. Fabricator. That should groups. Be special IPA. If we don't have one, we should have a local custom IPA for our user group. That would be great.
User groups, big way to learn. If you have any local in your area, or a lot of them are online now, doing sessions and teaching you different things. You can always find great video content. I know you guys put together a bunch of Fabric sessions that is on the Tips channel.
We got 22 with a couple more from 22 videos with another like three that Steve and I put together about like, what is Delta Lake and how does that work? And how does a Delta table work? But yeah, that's, again, we try to really focus on like education and learning from a new user perspective.
Yeah. So, I mean, content always there. What's really nice that I see growing a lot more now is trying to get back to some in-person user group things, which is great. We just, in our area, we got to find a new office because things were shut down.
And the Microsoft office in our Milwaukee area has not opened up, or I think they closed down the office and it's no longer here. So we'd have to find a business in the Milwaukee area. So if you are a business in the Milwaukee area and you are listening to the podcast and you'd like to host a Power BI user group that we will show up and do things for, we're also interested in doing that. One thing that came out of the conference that I thought would be really useful, the Microsoft Fabric conference was very exciting, very focused on data people. Mm-hmm. I'm going to float the idea here and I'm looking for interest from the community here on this one. What about a Midwest mini FabricCon, right? What if we kind of did a single day at a couple major cities, one day and maybe a business around Milwaukee, one day in Chicago. I know Alex Powers might even be able to get in on this, and we could do, I think St. Louis is where he's from. So maybe one day down there, literally just hitting Microsoft offices and kind of doing a morning 3-hour session around announcements and demos and things that came out of the Fabric conference. The new things, and then maybe the afternoon another 3-hour kind of like mini workshop around turning some things on or doing some specific things as well. So Tommy looks like he's in it.
I've been saying this for a while that we need to do a joint either competition between some of the local user groups.
I'm not saying competition. I'm saying literally a mini fabric conference where we do a little kind of like run around here on. So if you like this idea, if you think this is something that we should pursue, maybe work through this. If you would attend, or even we would need your help as a community to kind of push and promote it a little bit as well, because we'd want to fill these things up and kind of really make it fun and enjoyable for people. Let us know in the chat. Let us know if that's something that you would be interested in either helping with or supporting or at least promoting. If we were going to do a little mini Midwest area. So I'm summoning all my Alex Powers, you know, voodoo or what juice or whatever you want to call it. So Alex, if you're on the internet, let us know if this is something that would be good and if you would be willing to participate. So I'm just going to throw that one out there and see if anyone would be willing to kind of jump in that. So let us know in the chat if that would be interesting to you, if that would be something you'd be worth traveling to, if there's a city in our area that would be worthwhile kind of taking a little visit to. Anyways, that aside. Yeah, so Chicago is like a great place because there's a lot of people there.
Well, actually, if you're listening, a few people emailed me last week and they were at the Fabric conference and they were like, hey, we'd love to get the Chicago user group started back locally again. And they were saying that some people were thinking of some location. So this is literally, it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
All right. Well, Tommy commits to it. So
will reply to you. So
we're going to get Tommy to start making more slides now and more.
I got slides for days, man.
Slides for days. Because
I hope those are Power BI pages. You mean not slides?
No, he's talking right? Slides. Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, no.
I wouldn't be surprised if Tommy doesn't even use like PowerPoint anymore. He had found some kind of random AI generated slide. He's already seen.
Don't start.
I can just tell.
Don't bring
he's
it back.
Already, he's already getting excited about it. He's already found some AI generative. He literally just, here's what I want this slide to be. And it just builds the slides for him.
I got a cheap GPT prompt. Don't worry. So
there we go. Chat GPT, write me a macro that builds the slides that do this, and then it will just. I would use PowerPoint if Copilot could build all the slides for me. That would be great. If that could happen, then I'd be all in on that one. Excellent. Any other kind of conversation pieces around here from Arun's post announcement here?
Yeah, I think there were several that we kind of glossed over, right? One was the managed private endpoints, right?
Yes.
So
what is that? Let's talk about what that is first, and then we can kind of go in maybe a bit more of why is that important to people?
So let me see, managed private endpoints. So this is basically allowing you to access all of your data sources behind firewalls. Right, those secure sets that are not easily accessible in Azure. It's been so long that I've lived in the Azure ecosystem that just connecting to something's been so easy. I forget that like entire
other ecosystems people have problems. Are like
way locked behind things.
Yeah,
but this allows you to create secure connections to those data sources and pull them into the Microsoft Fabric ecosystem.
So this is a lot of the idea of like, you know, when you do private endpoint or managed virtual networks inside Azure, basically this is a no public IP address access to any of those resources. So you literally have to go into Azure, like log in through like a virtual network. Once you're in that VNet, then you can communicate with the assets or artifacts, as opposed to, right now, like PowerBI.com has a public IP address. You go to PowerBI.com, you log in. You know, anyone in the world with any computer technically can access the website powerbi.com, but this is now letting you restrict that and say, look, actually, we don't want that. We need a virtual network you need to be a part of first before you can access those resources. Right. Yeah. This is, I think, a very large requirement for some organizations that this is like a strong, like financial, some of the healthcare, like this is a much more stringent requirement around what they're doing in their ecosystems.
Agreed. And I think, well, to extend that, right? Like there are a lot of on-premise or, data sources that are that you want locked down, right? Like with the proliferation of, you know, kind of ransomware or, you know, so many attacks happening on companies, that the more you have, you know, security to a point where you can lock down certain areas of your environment, or you're only extracting, you know, information from the source system that's insanely hard to touch. This is what, you know, allows you to do that without opening the door too wide.
So this is something that I think is a really good thing that Microsoft's doing, is this is a part that's just very friction filled, right? If you're in Azure and you're trying to build managed virtual networks, it's a pain. There's a lot of configuration set up, and you got to make sure all the tools that you're trying to use are able to be part of that virtual network and be joined into that. I feel like at the end of the day, this should be really a very easy thing to set up. Literally, like, here's the things in Fabric. I want these artifacts. I want this entire workspace to be pushed into the virtual network. Like, I don't care about all the buttons to press. Like, just make it work. Like, just literally a setting, turn it on. Here's the name of it. Just work. And I feel like this is finally a place within, and Synapse, I think, did this a little bit to some degree with some success. But like, this feels like the right way to go about it.
So you're just saying this is that much easier path to get
configured
and set up. Yeah.
Sorry if I was confusing about that. Yeah. In Azure, it was difficult to do this. Now seeing the new experience, and again, I put the blog post or the support element around it, just literally shows you how to add the item, and you can literally just add artifacts right inside the network security, and you're just boom right there. Create, and it just creates artifacts, boom, all wrapped inside the virtual network. So I think that's awesome. Now, I believe, is this a Fabric only capability, Seth? Is that correct?
The managed private endpoints are only supported in the Fabric trial capacity and eventually the F64.
So they're
higher.
I do want to be very clear about this. Yes.
There's a guardrail on there.
I'm not sure I really agree with the F64 layer to do this or not. I can't make the decision for Microsoft. I don't know what added costs come from a virtual network across everything. I don't know if it's very expensive. I don't know if it's not very expensive. But at the end of the day, I feel like that barrier should come down lower in the F SKUs. I don't think it should be a barrier at the F64 level. I feel like if you're talking about security, we want to say like, hey, we can give you virtual networks above this threshold or not. It should just be there. It should just be we want to incentivize you to get out of P SKUs and get into Fabric SKUs. Here's what you need. Buy the Fabric SKU, get it and turn it on when you need it. So that's my opinion in there. I don't know if Microsoft will change in that direction, but I don't really love the idea that they're gating that feature to an F64 level. Just going to add confusion.
Yeah, to me, I struggle with it. I'm not gonna die on this hill as far as pricing is concerned, right? Like, there's a lot of infrastructure cost across the ecosystem, right?
Sure.
And what Fabric is doing, to your point, is consolidating this and making it super easy to do all this stuff.
That's what I'm hoping it's doing.
Well,
yes.
But it's the configuration that's super easy. However, underneath, these were completely different independent services or things you had to spool up and connect to, and all of the things that are just now going to work in Fabric. So if there is a gate there, I'm kind of okay with it. And I would imagine they're making strategic moves around, like, how much of this do we have to bury up into that level? But at the same time, I think the same way there would be with premium. There's enough of features within premium that point to enterprise level. This is what if you want enterprise analytics, these features already push you well into, like, yep, we need all of those things. I'm fine with having a P1.
Yep.
In the same way, it's like, yes, we're an enterprise. These are all of these security things. All of these things are things we already use or would want to. Yes, there's a minimum F64 capacity. But to me, like, the feature sets across those dependencies alone are, like, kind of push me in the, I'm not going to really harp on the F64 limitation until I fully understand, like, all the different points of it. So I don't know. That's just my
point. At the same time, we're talking about the simplicity of doing it, you know, like, with the user interface. But to Seth's point, all of this has been available more or less in Azure in some capacity. You got to buy the service, the resource groups. You had to have skill and experience working in Azure from an admin point of view. This is kind of the weird conundrum that we're seeing with everything. And from the security point of view, we're trying to make Fabric as easy and, you know, enabled for every user, but there's a lot more than meets the eye. There's a lot more integration. There's obviously a lot more security risk, and we can make things easy from the user interface point of view.
I'll disagree with your point around security risk. I mean, I think inherently Microsoft has one of the more compelling solutions around security in 100%. Everything that we're talking about, because everything is managed identity, you know, RBAC control access to things that you get access to. So if you don't have access to it, you can't see it. So I do really think that that's really strong. I agree to your point. I understand what you're saying. If you're a central BI team and you're doing a big thing and you're going to get to that level where you're hitting F64, yes, this makes sense. But I'm also thinking about patterns where, you know, just because I have an F64 at the central team level, that doesn't necessarily mean that the different business units I want to play with, I'm not sure if I'm going to give them an F64 all the time. So I'm also thinking about, in my mind, I think there's a pattern arriving here, or a new pattern that's appearing, that, you know, what if I want a business unit to kind of own their own analytics? If we're talking about self-service now, I may want to delegate a smaller F-SKU to that business unit and give them a price point where they can still do what they need to. They can still consume data from the main central place. And one idea I have in my mind here is, right, so think about the central BI team making their gold layer of the lakehouse. Hey, we're going to make a final lakehouse that's going to have all the tables we care about that we're going to distribute to the organization. Common dimensions, master data management, right? There's a single team that's owning the output of those tables. I may want to share those tables. And so there may be certain teams that I think that we've skilled up enough that they are capable to get their own lakehouse. Now, I'm not going to give them my lakehouse data from the central BI team. Instead, what I'll do is, here's your workspace. Here's a shortcut in your lakehouse to my data table. And so now what that does is it shifts where the compute load comes from. So central BI team pays for that table to get from raw data to gold data. And when I move it to a new workspace, the workspace that's arriving in that location, so like when I have a lakehouse, that lakehouse compute in the new workspace, its compute is being used to go back to the central BI team. So I think there's a pattern here where we don't necessarily need one mega large SKU across many workspaces. I think we may find the ability here to tune and optimize more workspaces with smaller SKUs designed for very specific teams or purposes across the business. So I feel like there's an opportunity here for us to be able to give various teams more control, give them more access to certain things. And that's where the reason why I'm thinking that pattern exists. This is where I have the hard problem around, okay, if we're talking VNets, well, probably this should be more of a complete solution around VNets across more of the lower end SKUs, because I'm not going to want to give the finance team their own workspace that's smaller, because they don't need to do as much heavy lifting maybe, but they do need a VNet around their ecosystem. So that's, I guess my hesitation here is, with Fabric SKUs coming out and being more of a uniform experience on how premium works, premium things, I feel like I prefer that to be more full featured through all the Fabric SKUs, and then I pay more on compute, right? So if you turn on the VNet and every day it consumes, I don't know, 1,000 CUs every day, fine, so be it. That's on me to manage the cost, right? The cost of that compute unit. Don't just give me the virtual network for free. Charge my tenant some sort of amount of compute units. Yeah. And if I run out, I run out. So throttle me. Like, if that happens, then I just know I need to go buy a bigger compute unit that will increase the price, pay for the virtual network, and all the other things that are going on there. So that's kind of my perspective on why I'm saying what I'm saying.
I don't disagree with you.
Sweet, let's move on. I win.
to your point, like, it'll be, and this is where I'm not going to die on the hill, right? Like, yeah. I think you make a really good argument from the standpoint that could there be a centralized group that is doing other things on the higher capacities and then have other business units be able to run on lower capacities?
Yes.
Or I think, or is it prohibitive? Is it prohibitive in such a way that if you're going to be using a VNet, all of the workspaces or all the things have to be in there and then have to abide by the higher SKU? And that's why I just don't know yet, right?
Like, yep, correct.
The pattern of building, you know, an ecosystem and then understanding how we have to leverage licensing to support that is still something I haven't fully gone end to end on.
I feel like there's a pattern here of like central common workloads, and then there's like self-service workloads, and self-service workloads are going to be more bursty. They're going to be on more on demand. There's going to be more abuse in those self-service modes because someone's going to show up with an Excel document and produce a really unfiltered table in Excel, and the queries will just chew. And they're like, hey, this sucks. It's slow, but there's a user education element here that needs to happen. Or, hey, did you know you can do the same thing in paginated reports? Did you know you could do the same thing in data explorations? Like, maybe we just didn't do a good enough job explaining to the users, like, hey, you don't always have to default back to Excel to go get the data you care about. There are other parts of the tool that still run at a performant level that still give you what you need.
Yeah. So one area I did want to cover and make sure we did was there was that one section that was in the announcement where Microsoft was reimagining Purview. Did you catch any sessions like or any of the announcements, or did they demo any of that? Because essentially what I read through in the links was the big shift is Purview is a PaaS service, platform as a service. So it requires you standing up all the infrastructure, et cetera. The big shift is it's switching to a SaaS. And I think the interface is going to be much more business friendly. But it still seems like it's going to live outside of Fabric as its own thing. Called the data catalog. That's what I'm reading through here. But it would be a significant difference as it relates to like making it an easier to use tool for the business, provide more reporting around, you know, your progress in data governance, and it being something that is much easier to kind of stand up and get going with.
That's a great point that you bring out there. And it literally is like a one-liner, right, in the note there. It's literally at the end of, you know, it's talks like a paragraph here. We're announcing deeper integration with Purview. Honestly, my opinion here is Purview has a lot of work cut out for it in general. One, Purview took forever to kind of get out the door for one, right? Mm-hmm. I've always wanted Purview to kind of give me that complete lineage story that other tools already have. And one of the things I'll point out here that was kind of interesting, Microsoft announced inside their main session, they said, hey, by the way, Unity Catalog is going to get its own card inside Fabric. It's going to have a Unity Catalog Fabric integrated card for Databricks. And when they brought out the team lead from Databricks on the stage, literally we got what Purview should have been. It was a little bit like, whoa, because it's like we captured data lineage from start to finish. We have a catalog of all the things that you need. We have all these things. We have data governance. We have data quality. Like a lot of the things that Purview is supposed to kind of be doing, like the Databricks demo, like demoed all of this. And there were two kind of hooks at the end. One hook was like, okay, cool. You've built everything in Databricks. It's amazing. Oh, and by the way, you can get it in Power BI. Here's a button to press and you get a Power BI report. Like that was like one ending of their whole demo. I was like, okay, cool. But then I was like, hey, Microsoft, take note. They've already like, they literally have built everything that we need right now. And they just talked about it. So like, great. Very excited about the integration between Unity Catalog and Fabric, which is going to be wonderful. That's going to be a huge feature when it comes out. I will be very excited for it. But then in addition to that, then they started talking about the Unity Catalog Integrator. And I think that's really important, but I do think there's this concept, and I kept talking about this at the concept at the conference, was there's this concept of data gravity. Where does your data live? Where's the gravity of that data pull you to, right? If you've already built a lot of things in other solutions in cloud and you have data gravity in Databricks, you're not going to just want to just turn it all off and move it all over to Fabric at one time. It's just not going to happen. You've already built process. You've already built things in that direction. Okay. The reason I bring all this up is because I think Purview is trying to be a larger scope than just Power BI and Fabric. So yes, we do a lot of things inside Power BI and Fabric, but Purview is like scanning all your blob storage, scanning your Cosmos database, scanning all your SQL databases. So Purview is this idea of like, hey, we can scan any data anywhere in your data platform from Microsoft and tell you like, here's where we found social security numbers. Here's where we found phone numbers. Here's where data is potentially leaving your organization or not. I think that's extremely valuable. But what I really want is I just want to focus on controlling it inside Power BI. That's my challenge right now. So a demo that Rui did, this is going to tie in here, I promise. Rui did a demo, and he actually has a GitHub repo where he talked about this one. With the new Fabric APIs, and there's now a new Power BI report format, PBIR format, where the report side is now going to be simplified reporting schema. And what Rui demoed is he demoed an API call to go access a report, pull out the details all the way down to the visual level, and get the visual definition of things from the report and doing everything programmatically through code. So sorry, Donald, it's not a beer. It's not a PBR. It's a PBIR. So it's not a beer at this point. But the demo was amazing that he was able to go into the service, pull out artifacts from reports, and then see all the things in an individual visual. So you could literally pull out all the objects you cared about on what the visual was doing, its styled properties, changing its title. You could literally programmatically change visuals on pages in reports, which was super cool. But the reason why I think this ties in is I don't think we've ever had this before. That feature never existed previously. And so from a Unity Catalog needs some sort of API to go call. Okay, I'm going to go scan all your reports and get all the details of your reports. What I think we really want, and I would be willing to understand what you think here, Seth or Tommy as well, we want to see source system landing files. We want to see data lineage through all of bronze, silver, gold, all the tables that are being created, what column by column, how are things linking together? And then we want to go from there through the semantic model down to the reports and then into the visuals. So I think there is a full lineage that we need at some point to be able to see all the things. And, you know, when someone writes a measure, total sales, we should be able to scan everything and say, where does all of this exist? And what are the definitions of all those things? This is what Tommy's been wanting. He's already put his hands up. This is for those of you who are listening online, Tommy's throwing hands at this point. He's throwing Italian hands. But I think that's what we want. And I think that's what they're trying to communicate with this Purview announcement. And if they can do it, yes, that's what I want.
Yep.
Sorry, a lot of talking points around that one. Tommy, what do you think?
I mean, the interesting thing in Arun's article, he talks about data loss prevention. Seth, you just brought it up before, or Mike, you did. How can we possibly manage all the different departments if they're running random Excel files? We need something like Purview to have a solution to say what data is coming in, what's that, who's working on what. The scanner API has barely worked for Power BI, and that was just for reports. And with... I mean,
Not barely. The scanner API is robust. Like, I think the scanner API does a great job telling you all the artifacts that exist. It's the activity API that really, I think, provides the power. Because now you can see export to Excel. You can see what like the actions people are doing. So the activities API, I think, is really powerful. And that doesn't necessarily correspond to like what's happening inside Purview, which it probably should. The Purview should probably be consuming the activity API at some level.
I think that I have a mix in my head right now of the Spider-Man quote, where great power, and I think with all the products and features that are getting enabled, there is that responsibility side where it doesn't have to necessarily be an easy UI, but it needs to be robust.
I'm thinking about the quote of like, ultimate power corrupts absolutely, or it was absolute power corrupts. You're thinking about Spider-Man. I'm thinking about corruption of people with too much power in Fabric.
We're almost at time. Are there any last minute things that we want to ping from the article? Because we're not going to pick it up again in the next episode.
And I don't think so. Again, what I will say is I think my final thoughts here is Fabric is looking very well invested in from Microsoft. Very pleased with the focus on development, I wish there were a couple more blogs. There's some features that I think I would like to see more detail about. One of them being metrics. There's a metrics thing that was announced. No demos on it. I don't have screenshots of it. There's nothing like tangible that I can go show, talk to customers about why this thing is going to be really cool. I think that would be a neat feature. There's also the task. What is it called, Seth? The task? Task flow. Task flows look amazing. And like, again, all I get is a very simple GIF image of them clicking around task. Literally, I had a class yesterday and I was like taking that little GIF and trying to explain what I saw in the demo. To me, there needs to be some more content around task flows and the metrics piece from semantic modeling. I think those are really going to be very impactful. And as us, as the community leads, I think we need to learn more about this and where we can best fit this into our company. So very pleased about the investments that have been made. Very happy where we're going with things. Love the conference. Can't wait to have another big conference. And I'm looking forward to seeing all of you listeners here in the Midwest to show up at our mini FabricCon tour as we zoom around and try and go see people. Tommy, what are your final thoughts?
No, I think we're heading in the right direction. And I think we're really seeing how complete Fabric is from the Career Hub, which honestly, I think is just going to continue to grow. Microsoft, you need some help with some documentation. Just honestly, I think that needs to really be expanded. People are going to find new careers out of this. But then we have this new balance of all the things we can do in Fabric. How do we actually manage it? There's still some skills. There's still some IT skills out there that are always going to be needed. And it's not going to be any different with Fabric. But I love the announcements. I'm the same way. I want to learn more about this metrics feature.
I think you're going to love it, Tommy.
I already love scorecards. This sounds amazing. It's gonna. there's a lot of implications for it, but I digress. But no, good things. And now we just have the conference in May, right? The big conference.
There's a build conference, I believe, coming up in May. So I don't know how much focus that's going to be on Fabric. That's more of like developer centric, I believe.
Yeah.
Seth, what else do you think? What's your final thoughts?
Final thoughts are I'm sad I missed the conference, but once again, can't compete with my family vacations.
Tell your family to wait.
Yeah, right. I do that a lot already. Great story, great direction. I loved the announcement article, and I think all the links and directions that we've been able to talk about for the last two episodes just drive into the meat. Right, I think Fabric is definitely coming together. I love how they're focusing on the career, the community. It's very reminiscent of what made Power BI very successful, and I'm glad they're investing it. The only thing I would say is there should be a banner on the Fabric blog, like the blog.fabric.microsoft.com, with a link to this. It's hard to find.
Yeah, I would agree.
And it's so jam-packed with all of the like the full story of what was, not only put forward at FabricCon, but also, that is very relevant to everybody wanting to learn more. It's a great, link page to go learn more in all these different directions. So I'd like to see, that proliferated across the places that most are landing, because even in our conversations, we were like, what blog
are you talking about? Can you send me the link again? I can't find it.
Yeah. And for us who know, it was kind of
We know where to find things usually.
I love the story. I love the evolution, and there's some really exciting features I'm looking forward to learning more about.
Get us some more demos. Get us some more. We need some more blog posts. Mm-hmm. We need some more blog posts on metrics. I want to see a blog post about the announcement for task flows. Those things I think would be very relevant. We need to see some more vision, what's coming from those. It was conveyed in the messages, but we're looking forward to those to also show up as blog posts as well. Looking forward to those. Anyways, thank you so much for watching and listening to our episode. Hopefully this gave you some more insights of what's coming down the pipeline, what we're excited about in the Microsoft Fabric Conference that came out. There's a lot of great features. Get involved in the community. Again, from this episode, you'll know Data Activator. Sounds like there's an opportunity there. So if you want to get involved in the community and you want a little bit less competition to start, adding support and talking about a subject matter area expert, go hang out at Data Activator. Do some things over there. Start talking it up. Anyways, with that, our only ask is if you like this content, if you like what we're talking about here and felt that you this resonated with you, please share with somebody else. We think someone else might also like this content as well if you found it valuable. Anyways, Tommy, where else can you find the podcast?
You can find us on Apple and Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure to subscribe and leave a rating. It helps us out a ton. Do you have a question, an idea, or a topic that you want us to talk about on a future episode? Well, head over to PowerBI Tips/podcast. Leave your name and a great question. And finally, join us live every Tuesday and Thursday, 7:30 a.m. Central, and join the conversation on all of PowerBI.Tips social media channels.
Excellent. Love it. Thank you all, and we'll see you next time.